Are you a Catholic woman who loves your faith, but finds certain aspects of living it out challenging and confusing? Are you a Catholic wife striving for a healthy, holy marriage and sex life, but don't know where to turn for straightforward, faithful, nitty-gritty answers to some of your deep and delicate questions? Are you a Catholic mom who's tired of the compare and despair game we all fall victim to on social media, and are just in need of some solidarity as you discover your own unique motherhood? Are you tired of the sunshine and rainbows pitch? Want to lean into the both and of the mess that happens when the truths of our faith get lived in a fallen world? Well, if that's where you find yourself, you're in the right place. Hi, I'm Emily Frazee, your host of the Total Wine Podcast. I'm here to dig deep and tackle topics that we are all curious about, but maybe too afraid to ask. I'll answer it all with honesty and humor, because living the faithful life can make you either laugh or cry, and well, laughing burns more calories. Welcome to the show. Welcome back to another episode of the Total Wine Podcast. I'm your hostess, Emily Frazee, and I am recording today with a new microphone setup that sounds so much better than my old microphone setup. I decided, you know, let's give something new a try, and I like the sounds of this. So I hope it sounds better on your end, and I will try to do these little improvements as I can. I am sounding super nasally today because I'm on the tail end of a cold, which I nipped in the bud pretty quick. It wasn't a nasty one, but I just, do you ever get sick and then you start to sound worse as you start feeling better? And then people are like, oh my gosh, are you okay? It was like, actually, I felt like death warmed over 5 days ago, but thanks for asking. I don't know if that's anybody else. But that's how it feels for me. So I sound horrible, feel great, which is why I'm here. So I just opened up a cue box in my Instagram stories and I was like, hey, does anybody have ideas for what I could record on the podcast? And somebody was like, yeah, could you talk about the balance between being, you know, having a job and working and being a mom? She's like, I'm about to be a work from home mom. And I've never, like, thrown together a podcast episode idea so fast because this is so pertinent to my life right now. So this is perfect. Thank you so much for asking that question. And I actually wrote down just some little bullet point notes of what I want to cover, y'all. Like, this is, I'm so prepared today. Now, I don't know if that's going to make anything that I say any more articulate, but we'll hope for the best. So yeah, I know there's so much discussion about like work-life balance. I want to, you know, I like to start my episodes sometimes with caveats and butt covering and, you know, a disclaimer, whatever you want to call it. When I speak about these types of topics, I am speaking predominantly, if not completely, from my own experience. Now, obviously, I'm aware of other people's experiences, but I'm able to speak to my own the most. That being said, what I'm saying is not gospel. If you don't do it this way, you're not a bad mother. You're not a bad employee. If what I'm saying doesn't really work for you, don't try to make it work for you. You have a different way to make things work because you and I are different. We're made differently. We have different life circumstances. We have different experiences. We have different jobs. We have different lives, different husbands, different children, da-da-da-da-da-da. We're different. And so the way that we figure out this balance is going to look different. So what I'm going to try to do is I'm going to try to give you the big picture principles that make this workable for me. And then I'll give you some examples of how that plays out in my life. And then you take that and take what works and chuck what doesn't. I want to be the type of person who's like, hey, I recognize that as somebody with a platform, I'm probably recognized as an authority figure, but I do not know everything, and I do not pretend to know everything. And if anybody you know pretends to know everything, run. Those are some of the stupidest people you've ever met. Oh, if anybody acts like they know everything, just run. The human brain cannot even. But I also want to just encourage you that as the person who was closest to your own situation, you're probably closer to figuring out work-life balance than you think. This is something, first of all, this is something that we all struggle with. And if you listen to my podcast episode with Emily Simpson Chapman, she said something in there that that has really made a huge impact on me that I'm carrying with me. I forget the context precisely that we were talking in, but she said, you know, Emily, the norm for us is war. We're constantly looking for peace and waiting for these moments of peace because that's when we think life happens. But she's like, no, the norm of our life is war, is tumultuousness, is chaos. So you being a mom who also has a job, if you're kind of like, okay, if I can just get through this point to get to this point where things are going to be peaceful, take it from somebody who spent the entire last year doing that song and dance, it ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen. Embrace the war. Embrace the chaos. This is life. Peace is fleeting. Peace is not the norm. This side of heaven, peace is not the norm. The norm is war. And that's not a bad thing. And I'm not going to like go, you know, I know we kind of live in these times where everybody goes apocalyptic. My purpose in resharing this imagery that Emily Chapman shared with me is not to be like, yes, we are fighting. Put on your armor. Let's go. It's not a war cry, literally. It's just if you feel like you're fighting every day, it's because you are. And that's okay. Lean in, embrace it. And just harness that as, you know, this is your life and it's okay. Life is happening right now in the midst of the chaos and the war. So first of all, a little bit about my own experience in terms of working family life. So I went back to my DC office for about 4 months after my daughter was born. And I had a really incredible situation. My boss was, oh my gosh, he was such a wonderful man. I hated leaving. And he really tried to work with the situation with me really well. So I would work from home 2 days. I would work in the office 3 days. And 2 of those days, I could bring my daughter. One of those days, there was a big meeting that we had. So I couldn't bring her because I had to be in the meeting. But he made it work. Like, I would breastfeed in my office. They even, like, put up a curtain over the window so that I could have privacy. Like, they were just so accommodating and wonderful. But it just did not work. I just realized, like, I was not made to do both. So I put in my notice and I left. And I cried when I told my boss because he was just such a wonderful man. He'd become like a father to me and just really encouraged me and helped me grow. And actually, he's a huge part of the reason why when I left, I started writing because that was one of the things that I did for him. So all of the writing that I do, I can at least in part credit him with encouraging that. And so I'm very grateful. But then once I came home and, you know, I knew I made the right decision, but once I came home, I was like, I was so bored. Oh my gosh, y'all, I was so bored because my daughter, she was an amazing sleeper. She took 2 2-hour naps every day and still went to bed and slept through the night. Okay. Dream baby. Like you hear of trick babies. She was a trick baby. But this means that I had tons of time at home where I had nothing to do because I had a sleeping baby. And also all of my other friends were working. So I was alone. I was isolated. And this was whenever I created the Total Wine blog. That was what came out of this, was this need for connection. Like, I need something to do, but I don't want to step into another career. I want to create something that can grow over time. And so that's where Total Wine was born. So out of that isolation, out of that limitation, grew this whole thing that exists now. So I am going to be looking at this topic as somebody who is creating her own business. Technically, it is entrepreneurial, which feels really weird to say because that makes it sound like I actually know what I'm doing, which I don't. I just do. And I'm like, yeah, this seems like a good idea, which I think maybe that is the entrepreneurial spirit. I don't know. But anyway, so that's how I'm approaching this. I know some of you listening to this, you don't have that luxury of being your own boss and being like, well, I had these plans, but they're not going to pan out, so I can't do it. And that's fine. We're going to reevaluate. You actually have a boss who you report to. You have things that you have to get done. You have deadlines. It's like, yeah, I have deadlines, but also I can move them Like, I'm in charge. You know, I can do what I want. So I understand that a lot of this, some of the things that I will share, like the examples that I will share, may not apply to you. And if you get to a point where you're just like, this is just not helpful, just cut the podcast off. I don't begrudge anybody that. I would much prefer you cut the podcast off than keep listening, just get angry, you know? Because I know sometimes we're in that stage where we hear somebody talking about things and we're like, could you just speak to me? I may not, and that's okay. But again, I'm hoping that what I share are big picture principles that you can interpolate for your life. Now, one thing you're not going to get from me in this podcast episode, as you will learn, is like this mom hustle mentality. You can do it all because you're a woman and like, hoo-ah, yay. Like, you're a human being and you have limits. And you're going to shoot yourself in the foot and you're going to burn out if you go about this of just like, I am woman, hear me roar, give me every challenge, I will conquer it perfectly every time. Because you're human and no, you won't. And that's okay. And that doesn't make you a bad person, that doesn't make you a bad woman, that doesn't make you a bad mother. It makes you human. And it's an opportunity to practice humility. And they all suck. All those opportunities suck. Any opportunity to be patient or to be humble, it's like, please no. but we need them. We need those opportunities. Okay, so let's dive in. So I kind of have like four big picture principles that, by the way, this is not like the key to being successful in business. That's the other thing that I should add to this. This is not like your keys to success. This is really how to not go insane. I think that's what these principles are more about, is like, how do you maintain your humanity and your sanity no matter what's going on? So let's get started. So the first principle is to really ask yourself the question, what makes you come alive? And when I ask that question, I don't mean to like find a hobby. What I mean is, this is something Jennifer Fulweller describes in her book, Your Blue Flame, is what is your tempo of life? Really honing in on what works for you, because there's so many working mothers out there. Yes, we are all working mothers, but some work outside the home, some work inside the home. You know, at some point I get so sick of these caveats. It just gets so overcomplicated to have to include everybody. Okay, anyway. Mothers who work outside the home, working mothers. We're just gonna say working mothers for brevity. Okay. What makes you come alive? What is your tempo of life? How do you structure your life in such a way that you don't feel overwhelmed, that you don't feel like you're just flubbing and failing? What does that look like for you? How do you structure your day? How do you structure your week? Do you structure your day? Or is that like too overwhelming? I mean, maybe like, obviously, like if you have work, if you have meetings, like you're going to have to structure your day. If you have appointments, all those types of things, you're going to have to figure out, you know, Google Calendar plus written calendar, all of the things everywhere reminding you of all the things that are happening that you're juggling. But what is your tempo? Where do you feel alive? And what I'm talking about here is, for me, over the past, like all of last year, I was like drowning and overwhelmed. And what happened is I was in survival mode. I did not feel alive. And what that means is I couldn't be creative. My creative juice was zapped. Like, I had nothing. And that's what happens when we go into survival mode. We're not living, we're surviving. And so those creative juices of ours, our creative problem-solving skills, kind of get shut down because we're just in survival mode. So thinking about your tempo of life, sometimes it may mean taking a look at things and just honestly accepting, I'm in survival mode right now. This is my tempo of life right now. And what are some small steps I can take to support myself, to work towards getting myself out of survival mode? Do I need to go to therapy? Do I need to really invest in some friendships? Do I need to have a serious conversation with my husband? Do I, you know, And again, not from a sense of like piling more things on yourself, but viewing it as, I recognize I'm in survival mode. I'm going to be gentle with myself. And at the same time, I'm going to see what are small steps I can take to work myself out of survival mode. Kind of that both and. But also, like, if you're not in that mode, if you are just like thriving, like, what are the situations? What are the times of day? Who are the people who just make you feel comfortable being yourself? I know we get a little pendulum swinging on this because it's like, oh, self-care, which, by the way, is not self-indulgence. I know some people cast it as that. Self-care is recognizing that as a human being, as a person created in the image of God, woof, okay, loved by God, I am worthy of love. I am worthy of being loved. I am worthy of receiving love. That in that receiving love, I am going to be better able to give it. So asking myself this question of, where do I feel alive? How do I feel alive? What are these situations? And then pursuing those things is not a selfish pursuit, because you can't show charity to others if you don't receive charity for yourself. You're pouring from an empty cup, right? I know I think there was something going around social media at one point recently where people were like, oh yes, no, you should be pouring from an empty cup. And I'm like, okay, you can't fix stupid. So what makes you come alive? Because then you can be creative in how you look at your life and how you solve problems. So this past year, when I was in survival mode, it was so hard for me to be present with my kids. I not only had no creative juice for business, but it was also so hard for me to be present with my children and to enjoy them and their joy. And now that I'm coming out of this survival mode, because my baby is sleeping again, some of these things that put you in survival mode, it's like, well, this is just life right now, and we're going to do what we can, but also I don't have control over what's putting me in survival mode. And just giving yourself gentleness in the meantime. But I recognize that I was missing joy. And I wanted to be present. I wanted to be able to enjoy my kids. And what I realized was it was really inhibiting me from being creative when things would go south. Like if they're in the middle of a tantrum, I would just be like, I can't handle another thing today. And I would just kind of go into blow up mode instead of, oh, you guys, like, okay, well, you know, dealing with the tantrum, but then redirecting, let's go have some fun. Like I couldn't do that step because I was so locked in survival mode. So again, like that wasn't making me feel alive. It was just dragging me down even more. So recognizing your tempo of life, what makes you come alive, that kind of pulls me into the next principle. The next point is that community and village is not an option. It is absolutely necessary for you. Absolutely necessary. Now, I know people will throw this out, and like maybe you're listening to this and you're an introvert and you're like, I'm so sick of hearing this. No, I recognize that while everyone does have a social tank that needs filling, everyone's social tank is going to be a different size. And maybe you don't need very much to fill it up. And that's fine. Nothing wrong with that. Again, this is about recognizing what makes you come alive. Like, what is your tempo of life? What do you need to be filled so that you can do these other things? This is about pursuing freedom. Love is freedom. That when you are in survival mode, you don't have the freedom to be alive. To a certain degree, in a certain manner of speaking, that when you're in living mode, you're free to make constructive, creative, wonderful decisions. You're not locked in something. So finding this community is not an option. Filling your social tank is not an option. We all learned this lesson during COVID, right? Like we definitely learned the lesson that some things can be put in an email and some things can be done online. Some things can be done through Zoom, but also there is no substitute for being with people in person. There's no substitute for that at all. Community is not an option. If not for you, for your kids, community is not an option. Now, again, Jennifer Fulweller talks about how if you don't have a village, you should buy one. Yeah, if you have the means to, do it. Get yourself a nanny or some sort of childcare a few days a week. Buy that meal delivery service. Get yourself a house cleaner. Like, yes, do that. But as you do those things, also recognize that that is not filling your social tank. Hopefully that's giving you the freedom so that you can pursue the things that will fill your social tank. But a bought village is not the village that's going to give you that aspect of what you need. And again, I recognize that everybody's social tank is going to be a different size. But we need that support. We need that in-person solidarity. I need to see another mom, a friend who I know, who I can connect with, whose kid has a meltdown. And I need to see how she handles it. Because first of all, wow, she handled it that way. Very cool. Okay, I'm going to take some notes because I really like what she did there. And I would like to try that out with my kids. We need that example of other moms in our lives. Now, I know that this is not easy, especially in this day and age. And a lot of us women come into adulthood with so many wounds in friendships. So many friendship wounds. Some that go all the way back very deep in childhood. I know this was the case for me. And so potentially, again, this might be another area that you might need to pursue in therapy. Can you heal those wounds? Can you start a process to heal those wounds so that you can pursue healthy, good, mutual friendships with wonderful women? I know it can be hard to find women who share our faith, and that is so important. But just really just finding good friends who, even if they don't agree with you, there can be that mutual support. The mutuality is so important. Not just one-sided, not just you fill my cup. No, I want to fill your cup too. Right? And that, again, giving us that filling of love that we need so that we can go into work feeling a sense of rest and rejuvenation and also take that into our motherhood. The next big thing that you need is spousal support. And I know people talk about this in different ways, but I like to approach it this way. When I think about the work that I do and I think about my family life, I have a primary and a secondary vocation. By the way, I'm going to get to husbands in a second. This is all intertwined. I have a primary and a secondary vocation. My primary vocation is wife and mother. Why? Because these are the people that God has entrusted to me. This is a very big deal. Nothing trumps this. Everything that I do should support this, not detract from it. And that's where my secondary vocation is. That's what I'm doing right now. This is my secondary vocation. This is part of what gives me life. And then I take this alive woman into my motherhood and into my marriage. It's very important. Another way of putting it is, do you work to live or do you live to work? If you work to live, your work supports your life. It doesn't detract from it. It's part of it in a very positive and healthy way. If you live to work, well, that's a workaholic. Work defines you. Work is who you are. And that's a lost sense of identity. And the reason why I define it this way is because this also applies to men. I know we always think of men as being the primary breadwinners, but fathers and husbands who are workaholics are not good husbands and fathers. And being a husband and being a father is his primary vocation. So this is not like one rule for women, one rule for men. No, this is the same rule for both. With an understanding that if you have a more traditional structure in your marriage where your husband is the primary breadwinner and you are bringing in a supplemental income, these rules still apply to both of you. The way that your husband balances work, like he should still be working to live, not living to work. Right? And you feel those effects. You feel those effects instantly. Maybe some of you came from families where, you know, your dad was a workaholic and he wasn't around. Like, you know the effects of that. And what that means is that if you both abide by the same, if you both have the same rules applied to you, primary, secondary vocation, work to live, not live to work, that means that you guys have to function as a team. This, like, both of you working doesn't work if both of you aren't also parenting. Parenting, no matter what, whether only one of you works, whether both of you works, it doesn't matter. He still has to show up as an involved parent. Now, our generation, we pretty much get this. I know I'm probably preaching to the choir. And this is recognized as a huge shift in our generation, that dads are more involved in their kids' lives than ever before. And it's important. You know, when I was working in D.C., kind of in the social conservative movement, this was a phrase that was always being tossed around, that kids need a mom and a dad. But nobody ever really drilled down on what that means. Like, kids need a mom and a dad. Like, I'm sitting here recording a podcast. My husband has taken my two older kids to the park. My baby's sleeping. Like, on weekends are my time to get work done because my husband's not working. And so we're trading off. He gets charge of the kids. I get to do this. That's part of how we make it work. And wrapped in what I just said is that we both support each other's dreams. If you're not in survival mode, if you're in living mode, it's really easy, and it should be an important cornerstone conversation that you guys have, where you're talking about each other's dreams. And my husband and I are not great at this. But it is hugely important to the unity of your marriage to talk about your deep desires, your deep longings, and to support each other in those. I know my husband supports this work that I do. He said it multiple times. I want to support this work. I want to support you in what you're doing. And he does. And that is huge for me. That is huge unity building. That is a huge team building conversation thing to say. And you guys need to be able to say that to each other. You need to be able to have those conversations where you support each other in parenting, yes, but also in your work, in your dreams. Hugely, hugely, hugely important. It's not really optional. It's not even, again, if you are primarily a stay-at-home mom and you kind of have a side gig going on, it's not really optional for you guys to split parenting down the middle. Because again, kids need a mom and a dad. They need dad to be present. There's something that dad offers them that mom can't and that mom shouldn't. It's not her job. There's something that kids need from dad. And they need time with him in order to develop that. That's another thing. You know, my husband's with the kids at the park. First of all, he gets a taste of my day, which, like, it's super fun whenever he comes back. He's like, all I did was fight all day at the park. And I'm like, welcome to my world, honey. it does feel a little bit like I got my pound of flesh, which I shouldn't be doing. But there is a little bit of some, I'm human and I err. It's like there is a little bit of affirmation when he comes back and just looks grizzled. I'm like, yeah, you too, huh? I should offer him support to solidarity instead. I'm like, yeah, join the club. Anyway, that's not optional. No matter what your work situation looks like, he should always be there showing up in some way. And again, this is one of the things that you guys have to talk about. What does that look like for us? I'm giving you like the big picture, like this is a non-negotiable, but what that looks like for you, maybe it doesn't look like he takes the kids to the park on the weekends. Okay, but it's got to look like something at some point. There are times where my husband will take over dinner, and sometimes it's like last minute. Sometimes I'm like, honey, I had X, Y, and Z planned, and it is not happening. What can we pivot to? And he'll be like, oh, I'll do this. Okay, great. Thank you so much. You know, you're teammates. You're on the same team. And sometimes one of your teammates trips on the field and, like, has an unexpected injury and then can't show up in the way they wanted it, and you pick up the slack for them. That's part of being on a team. Like, you guys are there to help each other. The way that the world pitches male-female interaction, like, it's... I know I started this thing by saying that we're in a war, but this is one area where we should not be at war. But everything that we hear kind of reinforces this idea that we're against each other. We have to call that out. Whether you're like on the extreme rad trad trad wife red pill end of the spectrum or the feminism end of the spectrum, it's like, no, we both succeed together. If one of us is failing, the other one is not succeeding. We're in this together. Like, the two become one. We're buds. We're teammates. We're friends. And we're lovers. It's the best of all the worlds. We should be supporting each other, encouraging each other, rooting for each other. And the gift that you give to get you, well, sorry, hello, blah, blah. The gift that you get to give to your kids, showing them how you develop and cultivate that relationship. You know, there's this joke always that keeps coming back around, that screenshot of that tweet that, you know, do married folks feel like they caught the last chopper out of Nam? Yes, you are raising the people who are going to be in the dating pool 10, 15 years from now. Show them the example that you want them to pursue in a dating relationship. Give them this example of two people who root for each other and support each other. And yeah, you know, sometimes they get in fights, sometimes they get in arguments, but they make up. And show them how you make up. Give them this, like, this is huge that you get to show them what it looks like to build a life together. You get to show them that that level of romance puts every Nicholas Sparks book to shame. This is a huge opportunity. If you work and you're a mom, and your husband works and he's a dad, you get to show your kids, hey, we're both in all of this together, supporting each other. Yes, we have different roles. We're good at different things, and we harness our abilities and use them to our advantage. We're not in competition with each other. It's not about whose hard is harder. They're different hards, and we want to support each other in that. So that's huge. And the final thing that is just a non-negotiable is prayer. Okay, if you just felt a gag reflex, relax, calm down. I'm going to be very practical and pragmatic about this. I'm not going to tell you how you should pray or when you should pray or da-da-da-da-da. Simply that prayer is a non-negotiable. Ask me how I know. I'm so glad you did. Let me tell you. I don't know if, like, every now and then, like, one of these reels will pop up. And by the way, no shade to the person creating these reels at all. I think that, you know, we need these reminders. But they are also, we have to also call out the fact that what we see online makes an impression. And we just have to be very conscious about the impression that we are making. Okay, have I caveated this enough? Okay. So every now and then you'll see these reels where like an influencer will show you like, hey, set up a prayer space in your house. And maybe sometimes it's like a beautiful table and it's all neatly organized and set up. Or maybe they're sitting in a chair and, you know, there's like some clips of them sitting, reading their Bible, maybe journaling, maybe praying a rosary. They light a candle, da 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 da. By the way, I'm not thinking of anything specific. I'm not calling anyone out. I'm just like, these are things that I have seen over the years and probably even done myself, frankly. Not on a reel, but my point is that that may not be what your prayer life looks like. Probably not going to be what your prayer life looks like. And that's okay. But there has to be something. So what my prayer life has looked like now, okay, first of all, let me come clean. I'm saying this as somebody who has fallen off the wagon of daily prayer recently, okay? So hopefully that gives an edge to my words. That gives me some some more credibility. But this is why I'm saying prayer is not an option. Prior to my falling off the wagon, I was saying a rosary probably 5 days a week. Now, I'm not saying this as like, ooh, look at me, I'm so holy, I said a rosary 5 days a week, bow down. No, my rosary, I'm saying that to tell you what my rosary looked like. Now, the rosary is supposed to be this beautifully contemplative prayer, right? You're saying all of these repetitive Hail Marys, but you're meditating on the mysteries of the rosary, and this is the whole point, it's a contemplative prayer. We are not in a contemplative stage of life. So even though I was saying the rosary 5 days a week, let me tell you what it looked like. I'm sitting on the couch. I'm trying to sip my coffee. I'm trying to thumb my beads. I'm trying to meditate on some mysteries. but I'm getting interrupted every 5 seconds. My daughter is sitting there asking me 50 million why questions. My baby comes up and like gripes at me periodically. We're having to get my son ready for school. It's just craziness. Now, I had those 20 minutes to sit there and to say my rosary, but there was no contemplation happening. And yet, it set my day up better. Because here's what I've noticed as I've stopped saying that rather chaotic rosary, is that I forget to turn to God in moments when I should be turning to Him. Moments when I need His help, when I need His grace. And what that rosary was doing, as uncontemplative as it was giving me that grounding. It was giving me that intentional contact with God at least 5 days a week. And it made it so much easier in the moment to call on Him and ask for that grace, ask for that help, or just to look up at Him and be like, I am so frustrated with the situation. There was just, it made those moments of connection throughout the day so much easier. And frankly, I think those little moments of connection throughout the day are what we are called to in this stage of life as mothers, especially mothers who work. But in order to do that, in order to remember to do that, there has to be something that is also intentional, so that in the heats of moments, in the heat of moments, we can remember it so much easier. Because that's what I've noticed has drifted away from me. I stopped doing my chaotic rosary in the morning, and I've also forgotten to turn to God in those heated moments. Thankfully, I'm calling myself out, and I'm like, woo, okay, I need to get back on the bandwagon because I need this. I'm recognizing how much I need this. Now, I'm not saying you have to say a rosary 5 days a week. This is where the challenge comes of, okay, what does that intentional prayer time look like for me? I don't even care when it happens. Maybe it's in the morning. Maybe it's at night. Maybe it's in the middle of the afternoon. Maybe it's any time in between. Maybe you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning with a screaming baby and that's your intentional time. It really doesn't matter when. It just matters that you have it. That there is at least, I know the marker is like 15 minutes. I think it's a good rubric. Because like a good 15-minute conversation is, or some form of connection is going to be more intentional. So I think 15 minutes is like, it's a good rubric to use. I don't know why this popped into my head, but just thinking about reading Jane Austen books, I remember so many people would go call on a friend, but they would spend 15 minutes calling on them. So I mean, thinking about it in that way, like we're maintaining the connection. This is a 15-minute Austinian check-in, if we want to phrase it that way. So that way we can remember in those moments, oh my gosh, okay, Lord Jesus, I want to scream. I want to punch a wall right now. And sometimes just being able to verbalize that to the man upstairs is very helpful in the heat of a moment. So yeah, no, prayer is not an option. What it looks like, again, is going to be unique. Maybe you have a devotional. Maybe you journal. Maybe you do a rosary. Maybe you just do a decade. Maybe you have something else entirely. Maybe you are one of those people who can sit there for 15 minutes and just do spontaneous prayer with God. Teach me your ways. If you can do that in the middle of your chaotic home, teach me your ways. But whatever it is, just creating, you know, at least 5 days a week, I think. 5 days a week. I don't know. Creating some intentional contact. So that way you can remember to bring God into those joyful and difficult moments. Bring God into the joy too. He's not just a God of our sorrows. He's also a God of our joys. He wants us to thrive, right? Christ came. He said, I came that you may have life and have it more abundantly. He wants us to thrive. Not just survive. He doesn't want us to white knuckle it through this valley of tears. He wants us to thrive, to own it, to finish the race. That's his desire for us. And that's what prayer can give us access to and remind us that God is on our side. When we suffer, when we struggle, he is there with us, in us, struggling, suffering as us. He's feeling it all with us. And he's also feeling our joys. He's feeling our happiness. When we do see our kids doing something delightful, we can bring Christ into those moments. When we have our kids driving us crazy, we can be like, Jesus, are you seeing this? Are you seeing how well I am emotionally regulating so that I can help my child emotionally regulate? Are you seeing this? Because I know my kid doesn't appreciate it. Do you? Call him into those moments, but we can't remember to do that if we're not also creating those intentional times of connection as well. So again, I'm not really telling you, you know, all right, set aside this much time per week for work, this much time per week for family. That's your problem to figure out. I'm just telling you that these are the things that I have found are just the non-negotiables to stay sane. Because if we're sane, if we're mentally stable, then we have the freedom, we have the ability to figure out what that work-family-life balance looks like for us. And that's, I think, the whole point. All of these things that I'm talking about give you that freedom because they help you feel alive. They help you thrive. And when you're thriving, you can conquer anything. You can conquer absolutely anything. Even if things get you down, you can look at it with a level of perspective, like, okay, this is a season, we're going to handle the season. How can we handle the season? You can't really do that in survival mode. And again, I'm not trying to like be like, oh, you're in survival mode, terrible you. No, we've all been there. And if you're in survival mode right now, that's okay. All of these things that I mentioned can be aids in helping you come out of survival mode. But again, in all of these areas too, there can be very deep wounds. You know, if you kind of recoil at the idea of turning to God, your father, get curious about that. If I mentioned like talk to your husband about your dreams and your first thought was like, yeah, that'll never happen, get curious about that. If I'm saying you need to build a village of good girlfriends and you're like, oh, I would rather, you know, put pins in my eye, get curious about that. If you already have all these things, continue to work at them. Don't worry so much about the work itself or the family life itself. If you're working on all these other things, those things will work themselves out. At least that's what I've found. And I guess that's the conclusion of this, is that this is all what's worked for me. Again, if this is what works for you, great. If it doesn't, chuck it. I'm all for take what works, chuck the rest. Yeah. I don't ever want to be the person who's sitting here telling you what to do and then being like, if you don't do this, your life is going to crash and burn. If I ever turn into that person, oh my gosh, just someone just come slap me upside the head. But anyway, I hope you guys have a great rest of your week. And I'm looking forward to being back here, hopefully, next weekend. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. I hope it brightened your day and that you laughed as much as you learned. If you're enjoying the show and want more people to learn about what I share here, please leave a review and even share with a friend. I hope you'll join me again soon. Until then.